for the trades as long as it's counted towards the degree and only to the state tuition rate. So I can give you more examples, but we are going to be much stronger on those areas, but also using comparable benefits. Comparable benefits are those offered by governmental entities, mainly state and federal entities. Like reader services are provided by the colleges. I went to college myself. I used my own reader and choose them. And I did that with the school. The agency was willing to do it, but I advocated and the school did what I wanted. So I didn't have to use money from the agency. We don't have that many clients that use readers, but we are going to be very strong on doing that. So in general, like I mentioned to you, right now we are spending a rate of around $1 million on client services. The last fiscal year was around $1.35 million. With all the cuts we did, we are now into $1 million. But we need to go down to maybe 500,000. And to do that, we need to get into order of selection. I'm going to ask Carol to explain more on that, but it's there has three, it's called A, B, and C, or one, two, and three areas. The I call it the first priority are those who are most significantly disabled. The second is significantly disabled, and the third category are everybody else. We only have, again, $500,000 for a fiscal year, and that's money only for those who are active clients now. So in other words, we cannot open more cases because then we are going to be in big trouble and we don't want to lay off more people. So the money that we have budgeted now is for those who are clients. Those clients are not going to be affected. We are not closing their cases. Those cases remain open. Keep in mind that we're still mandated to spend 15% of our budget on pre-employment transition services. They are going to be put in a different category, which will be potentially eligible, meaning they are not eligible, but potentially. But still, we have to spend money there. So we are closing all categories. I mentioned to you that our overall budget, state and federal grant, is around $4.3 million. With the cuts we are making, we are right on there on the budget. But we are also predicting maybe, but again it's a maybe, to get around $200,000 on program income or Social Security reimbursement and some realignment, around maybe $200,000. So we are talking another $400,000. That if or when we get that, then we open the categories as soon as possible to serve those clients in the waiting list.
Carlos?
Yeah.
So I understand your comment about the not accepting new cases, the money that we have budgeted today is supporting the client load that we have already. And from what I'm hearing you saying, that any new clients essentially would be on a waiting list.
Correct.
So as cases are closed to them, the potential clients that are on that waiting list could then become active cases. Is that correct?
Not necessarily, but that would be part of the equation. Every quarter, we will be evaluating the budget and the number of clients. We did some numbers on those three categories. 20% of our population, our clientele, are in the first category. Another 20 to 25% are in the second category. No, 40% on the second category, and the rest on the third category. But yeah, you know, as we close, we will see the it's more the availability of money more than the closure, because there are some clients who don't take much money, but there are some that We had to pay tuition, technology, job coaches. So it really depends. I think at this point I would like to pass it to Carol so she can talk more about the process or what order of selection is. Unless you have another question.
I'd like to ask one more question.
Sure.
Because I think it'll go into what Carol's going to explain. So as we've been talking about order of selection a little bit, obviously a lot of it deals with money. Everything deals with money. And certainly staffing is a money resource because we pay our staff. When you figure out order selection, all the rules about order selection, is it just a monetary decision about services that are being provided, like college tuition or technology or job coaching, those types of things, or are there considerations related to staff load? Since we've reduced the number of staff that we have, I know that the caseloads of the staff that remain are going to increase, so does that play into order of selection?
Yeah, it does, but we haven't eliminated any VR position, so the counselors, the VR counselors, will carry the same number of cases.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the questions that RSA also asked, and that was also one of the tough decisions I had to make because, we will lay off staff, but we have clients that we need to serve because we have open cases, and only a VR counselor can have a case or manage their case. Okay, but everything goes into the equation, really. So with that, are you ready, Carol?
Yeah. Okay, so Mark, I could talk a long time, so you're just gonna have
to... I'm gonna give you 12 minutes, and you can finish after we eat.
Okay.
We don't want you to...
I gotta move, because I feel weird talking with my back to the rest of the room. So order of selection. The law tells us that we have to serve the most significantly disabled consumers first. And how we determine who is the most significantly disabled consumers, or we develop disability priority categories. And there are three. So priority category A is most significantly disabled. And that is where you have 5 or more functional limitations in those 7 categories. Let's see if I can rattle them all off. Interpersonal skills, communication, mobility, self-care, self-direction, work tolerance, and work skills. Right, that was 7. So a disability priority doesn't necessarily depend on what your disability actually is. Yes, you have to be blind or visually impaired to be eligible for services with the agency, but that disability alone doesn't determine what your functional limitations are. So that's category A. Category B is significantly disabled, where you have 3 or 4 functional limitations in those same 7 areas. And then category C is all other eligible individuals. The agency is still going to serve job retention cases. It's not a priority category. It's really an exemption or a way to bypass the wait list. So job retention, what that means is it's somebody who applies for services and is found eligible who is in jeopardy of losing that current job. If they're currently working and want a different job, or they've lost that job, they are not job retention cases anymore and will go back to the wait list. We are also going to continue serving those pre-employment transition age students. And the way that we do that, it's complicated and it makes no sense, but I'm gonna tell you how it works. So if you have a student who is between the ages of 14 and 21, they are signed up with the agency in a category, as Carlos said, that's called potentially eligible. That means we have not determined eligibility, but we have observed that they have a visual impairment of some sort and could be. So they have to receive, there's five pre-employment transition services, and that is the only five services they can receive. And I'm probably gonna forget one. But it's exploration into post-secondary education opportunities, workplace readiness skills, work-based learning experiences, self-advocacy, and I am drawing a blank on the fifth one.
Job exploration.
Thanks, Shane. So those are the only five services they can receive. Nothing else. So once they receive at least one of those pre-ed services, they can then apply for services at the agency, have eligibility determined, and then go on the wait list and still continue to receive those five services. Mm. If a student skips the potentially eligible route and goes straight to applying for services, they cannot receive those services. They're just on the wait list. It makes no sense, I know, but that's how it works.
Because they are eligible. They are not potentially anymore.
Yeah, eligibility was determined.
Yeah.
So it sounds kind of weird, but that's how the federal code of regulations, that's how it's stated. So that in general is what order of selection is. Now we do, Julie Buren is our system administrator for AWARE. She is going to be helping me with manage order of selection. So monthly she will pull reports for me that will outline who has applied for services in each category and what their application date of service was. Because order of selection is a first come, first serve basis based on application date in the order of disability priority. Confused yet?
Yes.
And so as cases are closed, Mike, this, or I forget who asked the question, but as cases are closed, that doesn't necessarily mean one case is closed, one more client gets services. It does take, you know, and I work with CAT, we'll work on a quarterly basis, because we have a rough idea of cost per client services, whether it's purchase goods or services, or services, staff time provided in-house. So we have to take a lot of things into consideration. So we could open a whole entire category at once to be served. Or, you know, if Kat and I sit down and work, say, oh, we can afford 10 more clients. We then go first come, first serve, notify those 10, and there is a process for that. So how much more in depth do you want me to go?
Question.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mike.
And this is just to be clear, but I think I know the answer. So since we have three categories, three priority levels, if you will,
mm-hmm.
if there are people in priority level two and three, so we'll never get services if there is a person still up in priority level one.
Right.
Okay.
We have to serve most significantly disabled first.
First, right, okay.
A few other things. I've gotten a question of, well, what if I'm on Social Security? Doesn't that, you know, allow me to bypass the wait list? It does not. You will still be put on a wait list. However, because you are receiving services from a federal program, that does entitle you to category A or B based on the number of functional limitations. So you would not be placed in category C. Now it is Social Security benefits based on your own personal disability. It's not based on a parent or something. It has to be your own disability. So I don't know what other question. It's a very complicated thing, and I can get real nitty gritty if you want me to, but I think it would just
maybe go home
confusion.
With a headache.
Yeah.
So the determination.
So the determination of which one of those seven categories.
I know. I'm three.
So.
Not priority categories, but the seven determination factors.
The functional limitations.
Functional, yes. Thank you. Functional limitations. How will accounts, how will those be evaluated? How do you determine it, which ones of those they have? There has to be an evaluation of this potential client,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And so that would be from, you know, documentation from doctors, from, you know, providing things that, like evidence that they're receiving Social Security income based on their disability, interview with them, there'll be this evaluation that will occur to determine that, right?
Right.
Carol, this is Angie in Scotts Bluff. Will counselors be making those determinations for what level or what tier, 1, 2, or 3, ABC, whatever? Or will that go to, is there somebody designated that once we collect the information, then that information goes to a person or persons for that determination? Who will do that?
Okay, so I'm gonna back up to Mike's first. Those functional limitation areas, the counselor does have to collect documentation, whether it's medical records, a student's IEP, family member reports, counselor observation, but there has to be documentation to justify, verify why those functional limitations were chosen or not chosen. There are definitions, what counts for a functional limitation and things that don't count towards a functional limitation. So in general, a functional limitation is something where an accommodation is necessary for an individual to participate in that particular thing. Circumstances of life, where you live, those types of things, that's unfortunate, but it's not a functional limitation.
Can you kind of hold it down back there? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then to Angie's question, the counselors determine those functional limitations based to a point. We use AWARE, which is our electronic database management system. And so meaning Julie, has programmed into our system to determine based on the number of functional limitations that are selected, the system will place that consumer into a priority category based on that number chosen. And so that cannot be changed. A supervisor can override that. However, there has to be documentation to show why that would need to be changed. So you can, because everybody knows disabilities worsen over time, whatever. So if somebody's functional limitations were to change, yes, a supervisor could override that decision in the system. But it's still based on application date. That date doesn't change. So a priority category may change, but the application date does not. Did that help, Angie?
Yes, thank you, Carol.
Is there any outside monitoring of how you categorize A, B, and C that you have to be accountable to?
We are accountable to RSA. And so when we do our quarterly 9/11 reporting and stuff, there are data elements in the 9/11 that are specific to this, and I'm not going to get into the 9/11 report, but that's where that documentation, justification, and the management of that wait list, those monthly reports, you know, financial costs, that's where all of that comes into play.
Well, Carol, it's about 12:05.
Okay. Can
we kind of bookmark where you're at, and maybe we can we'll think of
some good questions. But it's about 12:05. We're going to take a lunch break. Our schedule says 40 minutes. I'm going to try to make it 35 minutes so we can get back on schedule. So, Jim, if my math is right, I think we'll be back at 12:40 ready to go again, okay?
That's exactly right.
Okay, so thanks everybody for your patience this morning. You've been a great group.
Thank you.